Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everyone. Happy New Year. Welcome to Private Parts Podcast. I hope you all had an amazing new year. Hope you're all feeling a little bit more refreshed. I hope all of those things. Now, today I'm really excited because we have one of Great Britain's most decorated Olympians, Max Whitlock, on the podcast. Max is an amazing guy. Really exciting because this year the Olympics are in Paris, 2024. He's teeing himself up for it. This is going to be his fourth Olympics, which is completely unique and rare, which is going to be amazing. We talk about winning mentality. We talk about mental health. We talk about what it takes to become a champion. We talk about the Olympics. We talk about so many different things. It's unbelievable. He's an incredible guy. He's an incredible athlete, an incredible Olympian. And it was a pleasure to talk to him on the podcast. So you're really going to enjoy this one, especially in the new year and you're teeing yourself up for 2024. This is a big one. Okay, listen, remember, we're also on social media at Private Podcast. We're on YouTube and TikTok as well. You can check out all the videos. Please enjoy today's episode with the one, the only, Mr. Max Whitlock. Max, welcome to Private Parts. I've been really excited about this.
Yeah, no, so am I. To be honest, I love a podcast. I think it's good to just sit, have a nice, chilled conversation, a chat. So I'm looking forward to it. Thanks for having me on.
I was listening to some of your podcasts that you've done and things you've done. You speak very much about like how you like talking about things now. And like not now, but like you like having that sort of therapeutic aspect to it.
Yeah, I suppose I do. And I think it's almost been a bit of a learning curve for me through the experiences I've had over the years, especially kind of the last couple of years. But I think it's because I suppose you build a lot of confidence when you just chat to people and you're just almost more open and honest within yourself. Mm. It makes you more comfortable with yourself. And that's what I found massively. I think for my whole life, I've almost just not really spoke about how I felt, held everything in for almost what feels like forever. So it almost feels massively refreshing just to be able to just chat and just be open, honest, and just have some good conversation.
I'm a bit like that as well. Mm. Like I actually went through a stage of being much more open. Now I've gone back into a stage of not being that open. And
really?
Weirdly, and my wife said to me,
yeah, congrats, that's new, isn't it?
Yeah, thank you so much. It's like, 3 months in, which is great. Nothing changes.
Yeah, exactly.
Apart from you have a contract. Literally, it's exactly the same. But she said to me, she was like, it's almost like you don't understand your emotions anymore. And sometimes I think when you're so focused on something, like being an athlete, when you're so in it, sometimes all of the other stuff gets put to one side. And I think that's a little bit what's happened to me recently.
Do you think?
Yeah, a little bit, I think. I think I haven't been focusing on myself that much.
It's hard, isn't it? I think like we spoke about before we come on as well, like when you've got social media and that plays a part and you have views of other people and you almost have what comes into your head of like maybe how you should feel during this or... I don't know. I think it's kind of hard to sometimes just sit back and just reflect on what you've done and actually think about you know, going in and staying in your lane, but just progressing and not worry about what anyone else is doing.
Yes.
And I think that's, I suppose, throughout my career, something that I suppose that I've learned massively. I think when I started to kind of watch everyone else and almost feel like I'm not far enough along with a certain aspect of my life, or, you know, I'm not doing good enough in so many different topics, then I think that it makes it really, really difficult to feel content with what you're doing. And I think that, you know, those outside aspects for me really hindered how I was at a point. I think you get to a point where you feel like it doesn't actually matter. You know, if you just focus on what you are, what you're doing and where you're going, I think that can make you feel a little bit more content on what you're doing. It's hard, though.
See, that is it. So to be sort of honest about it, I suppose, because this podcast is about being honest. I think that's what I've been struggling with most recently.
Mm.
Actually, not struggling, but I think what happens is, right, is that we have a blueprint, whatever that is. And the blueprint can be being the best athlete, winning gold medals. You know, that's your one, but that's what you wanted. My one was something else, whatever it is. And then you get to a certain age, not everything adds up to what you think it was going to be. Mm. And then you do start doing that thing. You start looking left and right at what everyone else is doing. And you suddenly go like, oh, hang on a second, they're doing that. Oh, hang on a second, they're doing this. Hang on a second. And then you start comparing yourself massively to everyone. And that I really think is the sort of, it's the death of creativity, because then you start to fear failure more. Because you're
massively.
Massively, right?
Yeah.
And you also are focusing on someone else's life, success, whatever it is, that has no meaning to yours.
Which is crazy.
Crazy.
Isn't it? But it's so easy to almost fall into that trap. And I'm guilty of it. I've done it so many times, which just sounds like you have as well, but it's just so easily done in this day and age when everything's plastered everywhere. And almost it's, as we know, it's the good stuff that's plastered everywhere. So it's very easy to look at yourself and just think negatively. But actually, if you just take yourself out of that sometimes, which is easier said than done, and just actually focus on where you're going, what you're doing, reasons why you're doing it. I think there was, you know, times where it was well before my first Olympics and I was a young gymnast and I was kind of looking around, looking at all these older gymnasts, and I didn't care of age. Age wasn't a factor for me. I just wanted to, if I was competing in that competition, I needed to compare to those guys. And I was looking around and I was seeing what I was doing, and I just felt so like rubbish with myself, because I felt like I'd never even compare at any point in my career. I just wouldn't be able to do it. And it's because I was just looking at what everyone else is doing instead of actually just focusing on what I needed to do and where I wanted to go. And that was kind of a hard rut that I fell into, and almost one of the two times in my whole career where I actually felt like I didn't want to do gym anymore because of outside sources, which is crazy. But when stuff gets into your head is a powerful, powerful thing, and it just, yeah, can switch your mindset instantly.
I want to get into everything, because I'm just so like, when you do podcasts like this and you sit with someone who's just had the sort of celebrated career that you have, it's, I have like almost too many questions that I get over, because I like dance around the place on it. You know, one of the things I just want to talk about before we go back is the comparison and things like that. Was there a person or someone or people that you looked at that were like, hey, I am now comparing myself to them, and that becomes hard? Because you achieved so much. You got gold medals. You were just killing it. And so therefore, when you reach the peak, the sort of only way back is back down, right? Because then you can't win better than the gold Olympic Games, and that's quite hard at times. So who are you comparing yourself to?
I think everyone around you. And it's the thing that's difficult, because you're never going to be at the highest level you want to be in every single aspect. So I think what you start doing is almost like being too hard on yourself. And this is what I found, was being too hard on myself in aspects that weren't my strong points. Instead of focusing on my strong points, it was like, just for a pure example that's come to the top of my head is social media. I find it so hard to keep up with it. I think like it's like a full-time job in itself.
Mm.
But then you look around and you think, oh, this person's doing this and about managing to post this much and do this. And it's just like,
yeah,
you just gotta sit back and just think like, just what do I enjoy doing? What do I like doing? And where are my strong points, and what can I improve on? And I think that's the most important. I almost got obsessed with it, almost the want to improve myself more and do and learn as much as I possibly can, which is a great thing.
Yeah.
But I think trying to stream like that is the tough job. I think that's really hard. But I think back to your point, I suppose I know I'm jumping a bit there, but back to your point of thinking that I've won Olympic gold and I feel like it's down from there. I think a lot of people look at it like that. But actually, I've looked at it very, very differently. So I've looked at it, you know, when I got my first Olympic gold or my first World Championships gold, I actually felt like it was only upwards, because I felt like I'd done more than I ever dreamt of achieving in the sport. And then I felt like everything else was a huge bonus. So I was only working on building, like, I'm a true believer of success breeds success. So I had my successes there at a young age. And for me, it was only positive, because now I have the opportunity to build on it. And I had the opportunity to try and retain titles or do more. So I think that...
That's the best way to look at things.
Yeah, I think that helped me kind of keep going, keep getting results. Because I see a lot of athletes, I think the hard thing is knowing how to react from a successful moment. I think a lot of people talk about, you know, what happens after what's seen as a failure, or people make mistakes. But actually, what happens after a successful moment is actually just as important. Because I know it sounds obvious, but you can either not get any more results or continue on that trajectory.
Mm.
But actually, it's what you do that actually determines where you go, I think.
That is a really great attitude to have. I totally relate to that. I think what happens is that we achieve our goals, or we achieve whatever it is, and actually we then, the sort of benchmark just goes further. Okay, what else can I need to do more now? I need to do more. But actually achieving it, and then just everything else is a bonus.
Yeah.
That's a great way to, and it almost relieves pressure in a way.
It's probably why I do it, to be really honest, because I think pressure ramps up as soon as you get a result or successful, whatever it is. You're expected to do it every single time. Pressure ramps up every single time, and the more you do, the more pressure you're under. And I suppose that's probably naturally the reason why I have looked at it like that. But I've also feel lucky to be a part of something that I've done from 7 years old that I thoroughly just love being a part of. I love being a gymnast. I love being an athlete. I feel very lucky to be a gymnast. So almost when it comes to, I've got these results.
Mm.
It feels amazing, but feels very surreal to me at the same time, because I've just done the sport because I enjoyed it. Mm. They've come along, and I've almost thought I could just kind of try and keep enjoying that process of just loving what I'm doing.
When you're 7 years old and you go into the gym, and you... When I was 7 years old and I went into a gym, I think I picked up like a badminton racket and I went for it. How did you start to ease into this place to become a gymnast?
So I was originally doing swimming. My brother done swimming. He's like 4 years older than me. And he at that time was a brilliant, brilliant swimmer. So I just naturally kind of just followed in that pathway. And then a friend from the swimming club come up to me and said, actually, like, you should come along and try gym. He done it. And it was in the same sports center. So it was almost a bit of luck. But he said, like, try a few skills on the floor. Like, my mum said, he said to try like a cartwheel and almost like a lift a handstand. And my mum said I could just do it. So he was like, okay, you need to get into the gym.
I can't remember it, obviously.
But yeah, apparently I could just pick up stuff. So he was like, okay, you need to come into the gym. So I did, and literally loved it. Like, I feel like from a young age, and I see it all the time now, like I'm part of a gym where we have 2-year-olds up to me who's 30 years old. And I see it all the time where kids come in and they just get hooked on it. It's a sport that you just constantly, constantly learning. Every single day you go into the gym, you learn something. And especially from a young age, it's just so constant. So that sense of achievement is mad.
Mm.
And I think kids especially, just you thrive off that.
Yeah, that sense of achievement is amazing, because I had that. I did a dancing show. I did a show called Strictly Come Dancing. Yeah. I had no dance experience whatsoever.
Yeah.
And I really don't...
You've done quite well on it, didn't you, though?
I got to the final.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, quite well. Couldn't do better, really. Anyway, what I learned from it, right, which is... I played a lot of sport when I was a kid, right? So rugby, yeah. Running, all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But doing something like this sort of dancing show, what it makes you realize is that you get given a routine, or you get given a technique, or whatever it is, much like sort of in gym. And you can't do it, 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 you can't do it. It's like learning a new language. Can't do it, can't do it. Frustrated, can't do it, can't do it. You get in your head, I can't do this, can't do this. Day three or day two, you slightly get it. Ah, I see it now, I see it now. And that, as you said, that sense of achievement is wild. It makes you realize in life that if you really push yourself and commit to something, doesn't matter what it is, whether playing the flute or driving a Formula One car, whatever it is, you can achieve it if you really go for it. And 100%. That was, I think, the most rewarding thing, weirdly, in my life.
Really?
Yeah, I think so. The sense of that you can achieve something if you really put yourself to it.
I couldn't agree more. And I think when you have that from a very young age, all the way through, like, I've been a gymnast 23 years. When you have that constantly, I think you're going to get hooked on something. I think that's, I suppose, why now, I'm almost obsessed with learning more, trying to do more, trying to expand on what I can do. Because that sense of being productive or being able to do more, or learn a new skill or do something new, I think that's something that, I suppose, even as I'm getting older now that I'm almost reducing my hours in the gym because I'm getting older, I'm finding...
Except for injury reasons. So you don't want to get... You don't want to strain your body as much or what?
Just for longevity. I suppose from a really young age, when I was in school years, I used to come out of school 3 days a week at 12 o'clock, drive to gym, get to gym for 1 o'clock when my mum would take me. I'd train from 1 until 8 and then I'd get home at 9. And yeah, and I'd be training 6 days a week. So then...
What?
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot.
You're 8 years old.
So basically, it built up to that. So I'd say from 7 years old, I started in a recreational program and I was probably doing 1 hour a week. And then it basically built up really, really quick. So then when I was probably getting to 10 to 12 years old, I was probably doing 15, 20 hours a week. This is kind of estimating. And it just builds. And then when you get into school years, it goes more. So when I get into secondary school, then I start coming out of school 3 days a week. And that's where it ramped up to those 35 hours a week. And then, yeah, I almost kept that level for a solid block. And I think that's the solid block where I really built my foundation in sport. But then you get to an age where then you have to start tapering off. And it's almost trying to make that call on when that is the right time to do that is really difficult.
Max, that sense of commitment at such a young age.
I know, I look back now and think it's crazy.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I know.
But talk to me about that, because what are the positives? What does it teach you? But what are the negative sides of it as well?
I think the positives that you don't even think about, like being involved in gymnastics, are just ridiculous. I think it's a sport that it's a full body sport. Like you do a full body workout every time you step foot in the gym. So you go in. If you walked into our gym now, you'd see 12-year-olds that are shredded. And yeah, honestly, and the stuff they can do is mental. So I think that what it teaches you is amazing. And then, like, physically, but mentally, what it teaches you is really impressive as well. Working in teams, working as an individual, working about, like,
learning resilience, all that
resilience
stuff.
Like, working through mistakes, failures. You do competitions a lot. You're in environments where you feel uncomfortable, so you gain confidence in these uncomfortable environments. So I think being involved in sport in general is amazing, but gymnastics, I'd literally say it's one of the best starting sports, because it just gives you a platform that you can go anywhere. And that's what I truly believe. But you do all of that as a youngster, obviously not thinking about that.
Yeah.
But I think what it does is then when you realize when you're older, it's just almost give you this platform that's completely set you up, which is incredible.
Yeah.
And I think I do look back and think now that it's, that the commitment then, and I didn't think too much when I was doing it, is crazy. You know, those hours as a youngster was mad, but I loved it.
Does it sacrifice social life or things like that?
Yeah, I think there's no point, and there's no getting away from the fact that it does slightly. Because it sacrificed kind of education in a small way. My school were massively supportive, which I was really lucky with, because I used to then free up. So I dropped some lessons in secondary school to then free up. So some free lessons to catch up on what was classes, the more important lessons. So there was ways that I was doing. I remember just trying.
That means drama was dropped.
Well, my art was dropped. I actually really liked that art, but I couldn't go on the art trip, so I couldn't do the GCSE for it. So I think it can be seen as a sacrifice, but actually at a time, some points maybe got a little bit frustrating because I couldn't go with my mates after school. But actually where I was going to, I loved as well. I was going to the gym where I caught up with my other group of mates and actually had fun in the gym, learned loads and felt good about what I was doing there. So on one hand, you can see it's a very small sacrifice, but at the time, it just didn't feel like that really.
Amazing of your parents.
Yeah, that's another thing that I think back and just think it was crazy. Yeah, absolutely
because,
crazy.
Because there's sort of, there's dedication to your kids, right? In lots of ways, love, support, whatever it is. But there's a difference when you have a kid who's an Olympic athlete potential. And you have to...
Potential is an interesting word, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure.
It's like... Because
you don't know. You don't know. They could be injury. They may give up. They may get distracted. They may not be good enough.
Exactly.
Lots of different things.
Imagine it, like, they give all this time, like, driving me to gym, out of there, waiting for 7 hours and coming back, hour back. And then I just thought one day that I'm just done. Like, can you imagine that? I think it's crazy. But yeah, I feel very, very lucky. You know, I had a supportive school, I had a supportive family, and I feel hugely, hugely lucky that they were able to commit that, because I wouldn't be here with these results or potentially not even doing the sport if I didn't have that commitment from my family and the people around me.
Is it expensive to do it as well? Is there a cost to training that hard and being that resilient and doing 35 hours a week?
I feel like as a sport, it's good. When it comes to costing, I feel like it's an affordable sport, which is nice.
Yeah.
I suppose it becomes more expensive when you add the travel costs in. At that time, I think, I suppose there probably was challenging times when, I think that's probably why my mum stayed there for 7 hours and stuff like that. I mean, she enjoyed the social side and there was other parts to it, but I think driving to gym an hour back, hour kind of every single, 6 days a week, 2 hours of driving just to get me to training, it tots up. So I think we added a lot more costs.
But I can see the way you're thinking that, because it's so, if you had said that to, a stranger, like when you're a stranger, for you it's just normal, that was what you just did.
Yeah.
But to reflect on it, do you realize how sort of insanely dedicated, that dedication is unique?
Yeah, I suppose, but like I said, I didn't think about it.
But what was just driving you? The what drives you? So if I was going to go deep into this, right, like and pretend I'm a therapist. Normally what drives people, right, is the sense of like validation for whatever reason. There's the sense of like the competitiveness, the sense of you want to be the best or whatever it is. There's normally a reason for what drives you or gives you that dedication. Otherwise you get distracted.
Yeah.
You didn't get distracted and you drove towards it. So where does that drive come from? Your family seems great. You seem great. You're committed. So it's a rare thing. Maybe it's just your mind is.
I think I hate the fact of giving up on something. I hate that fact. But I think from a young age, first thing was I enjoyed it. So it made that a lot easier.
Mm.
But I think, I suppose, I almost get obsessed with learning more, improving, and the opportunity to grab onto that and constantly improve. I think I've done the same as what I was saying. I see every day these young children get hooked on the sport and obsessed with it in a really, really positive way. I've done the same because I was just constantly improving the sport. And I suppose when you do that and then you start going to competition, there's always something new to do. And there's always some new targets that I can try and aim towards or something I can just go after. I think I got that. And I suppose now what I'm realizing as I'm getting older, actually gymnastics brings me a lot of sense of purpose, which I'm realizing as I get older how important that is. But maybe that was the same when I was younger, but just not thinking about it in the same way. Do you know what I mean? Maybe I had the same effect, but just consciously thinking. Do you know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
On the circuit, you must have been, you were good. People saw you coming to them, they're like, oh, for fuck's sake, he's fucking here again. It must have been.
Well, from a young age, I think coaches picked me out. I remember one coach said to my mum and dad that they think that I'll be one that goes to the end. But really? That's such a long shot to be able to say that. It's such a hard thing to be able to say that, because so many children drop out, especially when you get to kind of 14, 15 years old, because of the things you're saying and being distracted and different factors. But I think I didn't start coming into my own, if you like, as a gymnast until I was probably around that age, kind of.
What do you mean coming into your own?
Actually, I suppose bringing in, starting to kind of get up there with results. I think I was good when I was young, really young. Mm-hmm. And then I think I went through a long period of time that my parents actually talk about, where I was always on the outside of the teams. I was always not kind of getting in there. I wasn't kind of making it into that kind of main group.
Main group.
Yeah. And all of a sudden it just started to click. And I think that probably wasn't for quite a long time.
Is that puberty though? Is it because you became stronger? Is it because you became, something changed?
I just think people progress at different rates.
Yeah.
And I think that's what it was for me. And then I think then I just started to come in. Results started to come a little bit better. My skill level started to increase. Almost just started to click and just come together. And I almost then thrived off of that and got obsessed with it, like I keep saying. And then it was almost like a snowball effect, really, completely from, 16, 17 years old. And then I was, before I know it, a couple of years later down the line, I'm trying to make my first Olympic Games. And it was just like, madness when you think about that career. But like, it was just a time where I was just trying to do more every single time.
And everything keeps moving, because at the beginning, I imagine you're just in the gym and you're trying to do whatever move it is.
Yeah.
And then suddenly it's like, well, someone says, well, you can go to the Southwest Championships, whatever it is, right? And you're great and you go to that. And then suddenly, you know, Great Britain is knocking on the door, and suddenly you're going, oh my God, I'm going to go to the Olympics. What happens when that happens, when you're getting picked to go to the Olympics? How does that work?
I suppose it was an interesting process, because in the grand scheme of things, when I was working towards London 2012, the first Olympic Games I had the opportunity to go to.
Man, that is just...
Yeah, London was crazy. I thought, yeah, lucky.
What were
games.
You were 10?
So I was 19. But in the grand scheme of things, I was really inexperienced as a gymnast, because I hadn't done a World Championships before it.
Yeah.
I'd done like some European Championships and the Commonwealth Games, but that was kind of about it. So I think working towards that, yeah, I was set on, as we got closer, I was set on, yeah, I want to make that team. I need to make that team. And was doing lots of comps in the lead up to it. An interesting point is that I was told by this team selector that wasn't my cycle. Almost to say that, yeah, we don't want you for this team. You're not going to be picked for that selection.
Mm.
And that almost just spurred me on massively to make sure that I need to make that team even more now. Because I think one thing that I've really...
You hate rejection.
Yeah, and I love proving people wrong as well, yeah, on the flip side of that. And I think I've almost had that throughout my whole career. So I think that was almost the first real, real hit of that. And then I went to competitions and I actually made mistakes. I made mistakes in 3 competitions in a row. And I thought I wasn't going to make the team. And it come to it. Yeah, obviously making a London 2012 team, I mean, you get the call. It's just a surreal moment. And I suppose, like I said, I was 19. God. I was so young. The opportunity to do a home games, you'd never want to miss out on. Yeah. So I remember being told that I wasn't gonna make that team because it wasn't my cycle. And then when I did make the team, I was told that I probably wouldn't medal on the pommel horse. That was my kind of strongest piece. So you're told all these things and stuff like that. But for me, I suppose it goes into that thing.
Yeah, that's self-belief.
I suppose in a way, but almost I had my targets that I wanted to try and do. And do you know what? I was young, inexperienced. I just, had nothing to lose. I think that was a real big different mindset.
It's the naivety. Yeah. It's your biggest weapon.
Completely.
Because you just like, and I say this to so many people, naivety is your biggest weapon because you don't care about the failure. You're just like, you have nothing to lose. I'm just going to go for it.
And a nothing to lose mindset in a pressure environment like the Olympic Games is so powerful. So powerful. Going in there just thinking, I'm going to give it my best shot. If it goes to plan, it goes to plan. If it don't, I'll try again next time. And that is really powerful. And I think that's the luxury of being young and inexperienced. So I had that luxury in London. And going out there and just competing in front of a home crowd was crazy. Absolute crazy. The whole experience of
I just got nervous. I just still thinking about it.
I remember.
When you're standing there and it's the pommel, right? And you're standing there and you're breathing in, you're breathing out, and you're about to go into your routine.
Yeah.
You're in London. You know this is...
It goes quiet in this packed out arena. Like, yeah. The feeling is crazy. Crazy.
And you have to be perfect. You can't... You have to... It's your time. All of that practice. Mm. All of those moments. All of those little, 35-hour weeks leading to this moment for this... Yeah. I don't know how long the routine is. A minute? 2 minutes?
Yeah, just over a minute probably.
Yeah.
And it all comes down to that. And I think that's something that I suppose... It's so easy to look at it like that, but there's something that I try hard not to think about. Because all that does is just literally pile pressure on in that moment. So I think it's just thinking about the process. It's hard when it goes quiet. You can almost feel all eyes on you and you put your hands on a pommel horse and everything just feels real in that moment. It's just like, you just go, you go through the routine. But it's madness because you almost get into this crazy zone where you're in this packed out arena, but you can't really hear much. Like, it's just so weird and it's so hard to explain. But in that moment, it's just a really surreal feeling. And if it goes to plan, the sense of like, the emotions that hit you like a ton of bricks, like the sense of relief, it's just crazy.
When you land it, and then you go like, and in your head you go, I fucking smashed that. How great is that feeling?
It's an amazing feeling because like you say, I think that's when it sets in and you think like, all of that work that you put into that and it actually went to plan, like it done it, I done it. And then you can actually start to relax because it's out of your hands. But it's hard because you can't fully relax because then it's out of your hands and into the judge's hand and have a compare's hands to see where you place. But then if you've done a good job, there's nothing more you can do. And I think in London 2012, we had a different dynamic as well. And I think it goes back to a similar point I was saying about how you react from gaining success. So we had just won our first team gymnastics medal. I think it was in 108 years or something like that. Mm. I should know this. That's my memory so bad. So bad. But it was something like that. So I feel like I was holding my first Olympic medal and we got it as a team, which is an incredible feeling. And I almost just felt like that. Exactly the same as I was saying earlier, is that I move forward now. A pommel final and it's a bonus. And it just everything from then almost just then, go and give your best shot. And I've been trying to keep that mindset.
Yeah, you got to.
Trying. And it just gets increasingly more and more difficult as the years go on. But if you keep that mindset, it can be powerful.
It's really hard because I think a lot of us or a lot of people struggle with that where you sort of think like, and that is the mindset to have, is it's that bonus. I just want to reflect on that because I think it's so important. It's where you achieve whatever it is and you've been teeing up, whether that is, buying a house or you want to get married or you want to have kids or you want to get a certain job or a promotion or you want to make the football team. And then when you get it, it's almost like you're not satisfied enough. It's like, okay, what's next? And it's quite hard, especially in your industry, to live in that, to be present. How hard is it to be present?
It is hard. I think that's an interesting point, I think, because I hear that so much that you could work towards something and dream of achieving something and then you actually do it and it doesn't feel that great. I get it, but I think, I don't know, it's a really tricky one and I feel like I don't struggle with that as much and I feel like I haven't struggled with being present as much and like almost just living in the moment for that because I don't, and my wife talks about it a lot, I suppose, because I'm not so like emotionally attached to this medal type thing. So I'm attached to the targets and everything like that and wanting to do more. I'm finding it hard to explain, I suppose, but it's not attached to that one single thing. And I think that's what's helped me move forwards after achieving a result. Because if you sit on that one single thing and then think, oh, it didn't feel as good as what actually it should have felt, or anything like that, it's really hard. And then how do you move forwards from that process? Because you feel like you're in a rut. So for me, I feel like I thrive off working towards that target massively. So that's why I kind of love training. I love that process of it, because
you must love that routine as well.
Yeah, massively. I've learned that a lot. I love the routine. I love the process. I love like trying to achieve something. I think that's it. I like working on like almost a project basis. I love working towards something. And I think that's probably what's helped me throughout the many years move on from results and move forwards from them, because it's not all about that one thing. And it, when it comes.
Yeah. You're like an engineer. What you're doing is you're building a sort of a machine, and then you have the end result at the end, and then you go, okay, fine, we've done that. That's great. Let's move on. Now there's next.
Completely.
Machine. Yeah, that's what.
Completely.
It's really interesting. And typically as humans, that's what we really need. Mm. As humans, we need routine, and we need working towards something.
Yeah.
Actually, things sort of start to fall down when we don't have that real purpose.
Yeah, which is what I learned completely after the recent Olympics. Like, that's where I feel like I had my biggest learning curve, because all of those things that I talk about was great up until that kind of point after Tokyo. And that's where I completely struggled with all that stuff that we're saying, like just felt completely lost, completely just, you know, in a rut, and didn't know how to deal with it. Because all this time, I went to London Olympics, I went to Rio Olympics, and it was all fine and dandy, keep going, keep pushing on through. And all of a sudden, Tokyo, done, and it just hit me like a ton of bricks, and I was literally at standstill. And it was almost something I just couldn't deal with, basically.
But explain that to me. So what did you feel? Was it anxiety? Was it low mood? What were you feeling?
So if we put it into perspective, so London 2012, I'd finished the event. I'd come off. I had 3 weeks off. And I always have the mindset of after a major championships like that, I give myself time to have a really get that kind of fire in my belly, the itch to kind of the motivation to then get back in the gym. I wait for that. After London 2012, it took me 3 weeks, completely out of gym, and then I was back in. After Rio, it took me 3 months. So it was a bit longer for that process to like literally set in and me to be ready to go back in the gym. And I'm really patient with it. And my coach has learned that how I work as well, and we work really well together with that. So he's not like on my back, like saying when you're coming in and stuff like that. But after Tokyo, it was just really, really different. So I come back, and I'd made a decision to stop. And for, I suppose for my whole career, 23 years, I'd wanted to carry on for as long as I possibly can. Mm. I wanted to see where I could get to and where I could go to, and how long I could keep my body in this shape and keep going as a gymnast at that level. But it instantly, I got that result. I retained my title, obviously over the moon, come back, and then I made a decision just to stop. And I was like, for 3 months, it felt like complete freedom. Mm. I had no ties. I had no ties with times or anything in my day. I just had complete freedom. And I loved that for a short period of time. And then it just hit me like a ton of bricks. So I remember sitting on the sofa talking to Leah, my wife, and just saying like, I feel like a complete like waste of space. I feel like absolute useless. And because of my whole career, I've looked forwards. And I, like you saying, like I get a result and I just think, what's next? I'd done the exact same thing in that moment. But the problem was, in that moment, I didn't know what I wanted to do or where I wanted to go. Mm. So it didn't matter that I just retained Olympic gold. It didn't matter at all, because that was done. It was behind me. I felt just completely useless moving forwards, because I didn't have a plan. I didn't have these targets. I didn't have something that was just giving me that real sense of purpose. And I felt completely lost. Completely.
Yeah, it's awful. It's horrible, man. I think a lot of people can break that. And I know I've been through periods in my life where I've definitely, that sense of failure, and you're just like, oh, like what's the point?
Yeah.
What's the point?
Yeah.
It's when you lose that sense of purpose, and it's quite hard to get out of that. It takes a while. And the hardest thing is, which I had when I was in those moments, because since the age of 7, you were so focused on results, whether it was doing a move or winning a medal or entering a competition or whatever it was. And then you don't have that, you're it's splat, that's it. It's like, well, hang on, what is my...
Yeah.
And also you're so young. And then you're thinking, well, I've got a whole life. If I'm going to feel like this,
I know, it's a scary thought.
It's scary. And also when you've never been through it before, and I know, again, a lot of people listening to this who are in it or have experienced it, when you're in that moment, you never think it's going to end. You think, well, this is me now.
Yeah, because you feel stuck. You feel stuck in this rut that you just like... And I suppose, yeah, when you talk about that, I suppose the scary part was that I felt like I was in this rut. And I almost knew that if I did... If I ate slightly better, yeah, I might feel a little bit better. If I exercise, because I did no exercise, nothing.
Nothing.
If I exercise, yeah, that would probably make me feel better. If I did these things and I was, like, if I get some type of structure or routine or anything like that, yeah, it'd probably help. But actually, I wasn't even interested.
Like, no motivation.
I felt, no. And I'd only probably struggled with motivation, like, twice in my whole career. And over a 23-year span, that's crazy. Like, I felt motivated pretty much that whole kind of journey. And then I was in a position where I couldn't handle it because I had no motivation at all. I felt so, so low, felt useless, felt like a waste of space. And I wasn't even willing to do those three things that would even pick me up a little bit. Now that's just crazy, yeah, absolutely crazy.
But it feels like insane burnout. It feels like a huge amount of burnout. It, you know, people go like, and people throw around the sort of term burnout a lot, just going, oh, I feel a bit burnt out. When you have a severe burnout, all motivation goes, you really can't be bothered to anything. You can't really see the future. You sort of think, what's the point?
And
you don't understand why. And you can't grasp it from anywhere.
No. And that is, yeah, it's a crazy feeling that you feel like, like you say, you're just stuck in. And I think, I suppose there was loads of different factors. When I look back now, there was loads of different factors that kind of made me fall into that rut. But I think one of them was, I think pressure, when we talk about pressure, I think pressure is very normal and you have to be able to deal with pressure in any walk of life. We all know that and we all get different pressure in different ways. But I think I kind of experienced that pressure for many, many years, and it was almost just on this upward curve. And then I suppose I experienced expectancy that was literally just plonked on top of it. As soon as I got my first Olympic gold in Rio, it was almost like every single time I stepped foot on a stage or any competition, no matter what level it was, I'm expected to produce that. And anything less than gold was...
Man.
Because in 2018, I'd done Europeans at the beginning of the year and I'd done a Worlds at the end of the year. I got a silver in the Europeans and I got silver in the World Championships. And I was seen as, perceived as, I failed the whole year. And it's crazy.
Are you serious?
Like, yeah. And it's madness.
By who? The public?
Yeah. It was perceived to the public that it was, yeah, I'd failed because I got silver. And it's like 10 years before that, I would have absolutely jumped at a silver medal in Europeans and Worlds. Like, but it's just, yeah, when expectancy hits in, if you're not if you don't perform and do what you're expected to do, you're seen as a failure. And that's where it's hard.
But then, Max, because that's tricky, right? Because what you're saying is also is that, like, you also don't care about... You do care. You were saying you don't care as much about the medals.
Yeah.
You care about the sort of achieving and getting to the point.
Yeah.
But actually, at the same time, you then felt an external pressure in order to get the medals.
Yeah.
So that's a hard thing to do because... If you feel like you have the weight of the country on your shoulders, that means.
Yeah, and I did feel like I had a lot of weight on my shoulders at that point. And I suppose that's where I learned a lot in that period of time. And when we talk about kind of just focus on yourself and doing what you're doing, I think that period of time, I can massively reflect on those feelings now, have taught me those lessons hugely. And that's why I feel so much more kind of just confident and comfortable in myself now because of those experiences. So I do look at them massively positively. But I think all of those things that, all of those kind of aspects that set in and the external pressure, the expectancy and everything, that played a strong part in, I suppose, the reason why I wanted to stop at that point. The reason why I literally went and switched and changed my mindset I had for the last 23 years to actually say, that I'm done. I think it was me moving forwards. It was that other time where I just didn't believe in myself. I feared moving forwards. I feared failing and not kind of producing results I was expected to.
Okay, guys, that is the end of part one. Now, all you got to do to listen to part two is click over to the episode that says part two with Max Whitlock, wherever you're listening to this podcast.
Hold up.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue checkmark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.